Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Joining us on the line this morning is Mervyn Abrahams, Program Coordinator at the Peter Maritzburg Economic Justice and Dignity. A very, very good morning to you. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thank you. And good morning to all your listeners.
So what are we seeing? Are we seeing prices going up? Are we seeing them staying roughly the same? What has the last year meant for the South African consumer?
So the last year has been perhaps one of the worst that consumers have faced over the last decade or two, and it's largely connected, of course, to the pandemic. Mm-hmm. When we look at food prices, and if we look at food prices over the past 6 months, we would see that our basket of 43 very basic foods, that basket has increased by 3.8% and now stands at a level of 4,001 rand and 17 cents. Now, when we compare that, for instance, to a national minimum wage, which for the month of February would have brought in 3,321 rand and 60 cents, then we see that that basket of 43 foods are more expensive than a national minimum wage. And that is extremely scary, because when that happens, then households have to cut back on number one, the quality of food they buy, and number two, the quantity of food they buy. So they eat less, and then they eat less nutritious food in order to survive and come out on that income. And that is what is scary.
How is that calculated, that basket of food?
So the basket of food is calculated on the basis of focus groups with women in low-income households who tell us what food items and in what quantities they would want to buy every month should they have sufficient money. We then average that out across the country. So we track in Johannesburg, in Cape Town, in Durban, in Springbok in the Northern Cape, in Pietermaritzburg in KZN. And we construct the 43 most commonly bought items and the most commonly quantities that it's bought. And that constitutes our basket.
Right. And what we're finding is that that basket of food has now dropped below what people are seeing in terms of income. Is that right?
No, it's gone higher than income.
Sorry, I mean the income has dropped below that.
Yes, and so the income is less than what it costs to purchase that basket of food. So when we look at things like, you know, let's look at specific food items. So if we look at about 10 kgs of rice over the past 6 months, has increased by 28 rand and 39 cents. When we look at maize meal, it's increased around about the same amount. When we look at cake flour, 10 kgs of cake flour, in September it was 92 rand and 45 cents. In the end of February, it was 94 rand and 72 cents. So it's a 2 rand 26 cents increase. When we look at white sugar, for instance, 10 kgs, in September last year, it was 151 rand 80 cents. When in February of this year, it was 159 rand and 74 cents. So a 7 rand 95 cents increase. So, you know, and all these increases, of course, add up on the bill. So essentially over the 6 months, we've seen 144 rand and 84 cents increase, or a 3.8% increase on the cost of that basket.
So this obviously, as you said, that the real impact on the ground means either people can't buy the quantities that they need to buy to sustain themselves or their families, or the alternative is they start buying lesser quality products. We now, let's say we have that information. How do we deal with that? Where does that information, how can we possibly manage that knowledge?
So it's really a very complex situation, because at the very root of the problem is your macroeconomic policy and your labor policy. So it is about wages being too low. It is about social grants being too low. And then it is also on another level, a question around how our food system is structured. So in South Africa, we tend to move food quite far. So there's a lot of logistics costs in the food. So for instance, tomatoes get grown in Limpopo and gets transported to the Western Cape. So you can imagine the amount of cost for transport on tomatoes, for instance. So it's also a feature about how do we localize, how do we grow what we can grow. Of course, we can't grow everything, but what we can grow closer to the tables of consumers. So can we have a more localized food system? But then that impacts directly on your business model, because South Africa's food system is based on big commercial farms rather than more localized small farming. So it is a really a very complex situation. It's more than just saying to people, grow your own kind of cabbages and lettuces and things like that. It's actually how do we reimagine our economy, and in that economy, a food system that actually is resilient and works well. And the pandemic has actually given us, you know, it's caught us out in terms of long value chains and supply lines.
Can you just explain what you mean by it's caught us out?
So what the pandemic has shown, for instance, two things. The first is that long supply lines gets cut in the midst of a global pandemic. So for instance, the ships and the planes and so on that was transporting Italian tomatoes, for instance, which is most common in our supermarkets. That could no longer come to us because, of course, everything was stopped. And then the second level was because we think corporate and commercial, government's initial inclination was to keep open the big retail stores, but inadvertently closed the small-scale farmers and the informal food sector. So that couldn't, you know, we couldn't use the informal sector. And actually what we learned was that the informal sector actually supplies food to millions of South Africans. And that was the cause of the hunger that we saw during March and April of last year.
So where to from here?
Really, I think that the pandemic has provided us with an opportunity. It's a crisis that, of course, always has an opportunity. And what I know is that a lot of policymakers, a lot of NGOs, a lot of universities and academics are beginning to talk around, let us refashion our food system, make it more local, make it more scaled down so that more people engage in it. And I think that movement is just going to carry on. And once that movement really gets steam and gets discussed at national government level, I think we would be on the road to begin to rethink our food system.
Absolutely. And it's vital to have these conversations and make us aware of just how bad it is and the impact of the pandemic in this way. Because whereas it might not have been intentional, some of the decisions made certainly had unintended consequences that were quite dire, weren't they?
Exactly. And if I might say one more thing.
Sure.
That at the base of all of this, at the base of food, is the human body. So if we do not provide access to sufficient and nutritious food, we're actually putting the whole country's economic and developmental outcomes at risk. So for instance, we put economic productivity at risk because the children who do not get sufficient nutritious food are not able to absorb the amount of investment in education.
Sure.
So we find stunted children entering our workforce at a time when the world of work is requiring innovation. So that will have long-term effect on our possibility of economic growth, on economic productivity. The health burden will increase, and so we would have to spend more money of the budget on health and on clinics because people have not eaten sufficient and nutritious food, because that will lead to increase of non-communicable diseases, like heart blood pressure, high blood pressure, heart disease, etc. So in the end, not providing and not sorting out this food system and access to food and our wage income levels means that we're putting everything of the future economy of this country at risk.
Fascinating and important conversation. Mervyn Abrahams, the program coordinator at the Peter Maritzburg Economic Justice and Dignity. It is 8:54. Thank you for taking the time to speak to us this morning.